Today we are going to discuss the paper by Natalie Patent, which was done in collaboration with investigators at the Royal Military Academy and the Free University of Brussels in Belgium, which was published in the Journal of Applied Physiology. The title is Sleep During an Antarctic Summer Expedition, New Light on Polar Insomnia. It reports on the sleep architecture and melatonin and cortisol levels that were collected in a group of men during the polar summer of an Antarctic expedition. Participating in today's discussion will be the lead author of the paper, Dr. Natalie Patent, and an expert in the field, Dr. David Rappaport, director for the Center of Integrative Sleep Medicine at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York. My name is Judy Neubauer from Rutgers University in New Jersey, and I will be moderating today's discussion. I would like to start with you, Natalie, to briefly describe the questions and hypotheses being addressed, the methods employed, and then summarize the main findings and their significance.
The reason we wanted to investigate this expedition was that all participants in deployments in Antarctica complain about bad sleep. So we wanted to know why do they sleep so badly. And we addressed this by trying to assess all the determinants of sleep-wake regulation. And our main findings were that, well, they do sleep badly, but it's not only a question of quantity, like not sleeping enough, it's also a question of quality. Their sleep is heavily disturbed, as is their circadian rhythm.
Thank you, Natalie. David, would you comment on this study, particularly on what you feel its contribution and significance is for understanding the effect of constant illumination on sleep?
This is a nice study, which in part confirms previous observations about poor sleep in the Arctic. But because it looked at the EEG, the polysomnographic sleep, as well as the performance and subjective sleepiness and mood and vigor, it has the potential for giving us some mechanistic insights. In particular, the data showed that there was a delayed effect on sleep, as manifested by the melatonin and fragmentation. But there was also this ongoing chronic abnormality of too much light, which was disrupting the sleep as they collected the data. And this dyssynchrony of the phenomena is probably what helps us to get some insight into the mechanisms. Perhaps we could get some commentary from Natalie on this observation that there was evidence of abnormal sleep in the form of disruption, but also evidence that is supportive of sleep deprivation that was building up, that people fell asleep very rapidly, and also a disruption of the pattern of the sleep itself, which was very interesting and yields some possible interpretations.
You're right. It's not only the sleep deprivation effect that is striking, because people fall asleep very rapidly, but also their sleep is disturbed in terms of quality. So in terms of time, they sleep enough. But in terms of quality, they are deprived of slow wave sleep, which is the physical recovery sleep, and which also explains why they are in state of sleep deprivation. However, despite this poor sleep, they show no effects whatsoever on mood, and they do show attentional effects, so effects on cognitive performance, which is altered. However, their mood is quite excellent, really, better than that of the control group.
There are two points here. The first one being that the sleep is disturbed in a way that's unusual and different from many other experiments where there's sleep disruption. And I wonder if you'd care to comment on this phenomenon of recovery that, and make a speculation of what might happen if one were to allow the subject's single night or first night of darkness, essentially remove the disrupting factor. Is your prediction, in fact, that the abnormality, which was that the slow wave was very suppressed and moved to later in the night, would suddenly reverse? Or do you think that there might be a chronic effect, perhaps due to the melatonin, as you speculate in the paper, and that would persist into the first night of darkness?
With regard to the slow wave sleep, I would hypothesize that you would have indeed a rebound. However, I need to make an important caveat here, and it's that previous experiments in Antarctica, which took place in winter, which is the time of complete darkness, showed a similar delay in melatonin, so it cannot be ascribed only to the constant light, and showed a similar decrease in slow wave sleep. So if we offered our participants a recovery night in darkness, they may fare better in terms of slow wave sleep, but maybe it's the lack of alternating day and night that is the main disturbance and not the light in itself.
So certainly future experiments will try and dissect this out, but it seems a fruitful area for research. Coming back to your other point about the dissociation about sleepiness and performance, which we expect when there's disrupted sleep, and the fact that people scored fairly high on the vigor and mood scales, this suggests a very interesting point about the effect of constant bright light, which of course was not present in the other studies done in the winter. And I wonder if you'd comment on that.
This effect of light is striking because in previous Antarctic studies in the winter, there were also mood effects, and it's even called the winter over syndrome for people who stayed in Antarctica over a winter. And of course, disentangling this mood and sleep disturbances is a bit of a chicken and egg question, just like it is with sleep and depression, let's say in the normal world. And so in our participants, we can only hypothesize it, but this absence of negative effects on mood is to us clearly an effect of their exposure to constant daylight.
I wonder if we shouldn't finish up with some possible conclusions. The consequences of going to the Arctic may not apply to everybody, but there are other situations in which delayed phenomena of sleep or disruption of sleep and delayed phase syndromes occur very clinically. And what comes to my mind, and I'd love your comments on it, is that what I'm learning from this is that light has a tremendous benefit even when it doesn't correct the phase delay. And it suggests the possibility that in the elderly and in other groups that are phase delayed and sleep disrupted, we sometimes give light in an attempt to resynchronize them and don't succeed. And perhaps we shouldn't give up because maybe the light is going to help their mood and help them feel better even if it doesn't correct the sleep. It's one of the things I took away from the paper.
I totally agree with that. I think the investigation of the effect of bright light exposure has focused so far on the circadian effect, which is quite normal considering the neural pathway between the retina and the suprachiasmatic nucleus. However, our results suggest indeed that there is more to this light exposure than a sole circadian effect. And it might indeed be that it's insufficient to fully correct circadian disturbances or sleep disturbances, but that it is useful in terms of symptom relief for this kind of syndromes.
The winter and summer experiments will be very informative.
Thank you. This has been a very interesting discussion of how constant illumination affects sleep in men during an Antarctic expedition and shedding new light on the mechanism underlying polar insomnia. I'd like to thank both of the participants, Natalie Patton and David Rappaport, for an excellent discussion of this paper.